With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Come one, come all, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name is Marcus Speller. Big Lukey Moore's here.
My cans are on and I'm ready for business.
Big Jimmy Campbell's here.
Heyo.
And big Petey Donaldson's here.
Where are my trousers?
Here we go again. Football Ramble time. It's a new week. It's a new show.
And we've got some new love. It's a new day. It's a new love. Oh, I'm feeling good.
And we've got some snow on the ground.
It's crazy out there. It's brassic. Is that called?
Peter?
Brassic.
Yeah,
yeah, brassic. Yeah.
I thought Andy brassic meant skint.
Brassic flint is skint.
Yes. Yeah. Brass monkeys. Yes. I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah. So brass monkeys means cold?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
It's brass monkeys, yeah.
Brass monkeys out there.
It's something to do with. It's like, I think it might be an old naval term,
right,
perhaps. People will write in and tell us.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Let us know.
It's cold out there, but it's warm in here.
Yeah.
Hey, that's all you need. That's all we need.
Maybe it's cold outside.
Oh, dear. Should we talk about the Carabao Cup final?
Yeah. Jack Wilshere in the hole. Yeah. Doing the business for England in the summer.
I'll tell you what. We've got those Panamanians running scared if he starts.
No, I'm not having this.
We
were giving him
lovely
thoughts. We were saying that he was brilliant when he came back from injury. Yeah. Mm. And, you know, he has one stinker.
But, Pete, the world of football punditry is nothing if not capricious.
I know.
And you're only cruel. Did your last game. And Jack Wilshere was quite petty.
Yeah.
Let's call him petty.
Let's say he was petty. But it's because he cares, isn't it?
At least he cares. Well, at least he wants to do well. Yeah,
I hate having to fall back on that annoying cliche of an opinion. But that is basically all you can salvage from that performance from Arsenal. Jack Wilshere actually genuinely is one of the few players that even if you're 3-0 down, he's still motivated to try and change it.
And that's the
problem here.
Do you think that's why Wenger... has thought
hates
about
himself and his life.
We come to that. Do you think that's why Wenger's toyed with the idea of selling Wilshere, or, you know, he's put him out on loan?
Yeah. Well, don't fit in.
If you're going to start caring about this, if you're going to start...
you are too erratically emotional. Yeah. Get rid.
But a good manager, you'd hope, and I know Wenger has been a good manager, but we're talking about the present day. A good manager, you'd like to think, players will probably have a day off today, but tomorrow he'll grab Wilshere when he gets a moment and says, look, I understand all that. I understand you love the club and you need to channel this in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But I don't know about anyone else in this room, but I've got absolutely no confidence that's what will happen. Wenger won't do that to Wilshere and because he's had too much opportunity to do it already and he's not done it. Mm-hmm. And the most sickening thing for Arsenal fans, I imagine, Jim may tell me I'm wrong, but is that's a Man City performance that in the first half particularly absolutely there for the taking.
Yeah.
They were there for the taking.
I have to say, Jack Wilshere caring too much is so far down the list.
Number 64.
I don't think that's even going to be an issue. I don't think they'll even probably talk about that. But yeah, absolutely, you're right. That what Arsenal needed was for City to be having a little bit of an off day and be a little bit sloppy, and how that happened and how they responded to that was conceding what I think is probably the worst goal Arsenal have conceded this season.
With
Aguero, because it was just, there were so many things wrong with it. It's just a long kick. Mustafi, I agree with Gary Neville's comments. It was pathetic.
The second one on Thursday was a bit annoying as well against Ostersunds.
Yeah, I mean,
I know the point you're trying to make.
That was a poor performance in a game where the first leg was comfortably wrapped up and you're at home. This is a cup final.
But Marcus, here's what I understand. I agree with everything Jim said there. Take the week in isolation. Mm-hmm. On Monday, you've got Wigan, a League One team. They're a good team, but they're a League One team, given everyone the blueprint. Yeah. The blueprint we've talked about on this show, on this season, upset their rhythm, get amongst it, hope you can sustain it, work really hard, all that kind of stuff. That's Monday. Thursday, the Arsenal players have been given an opportunity to show the manager why they should be picked for a cup final on Sunday. They've not done that either. Mm-hmm. Okay, then the Sunday comes around, first opening exchanges, Man City's radar's all over the place. Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen. I forget who it was against. They had a half of football Man City, probably just before Christmas, I think it was.
Was it West Ham?
I think it was West Ham. You're right, it was West Ham. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was definitely West Ham. It was away, wasn't it? And they couldn't get their radar in. They couldn't get the weight of their pass, the right pass. They couldn't get it off quick enough. And it was very reminiscent of what happened in the early exchanges at Wembley. Mm-hmm. And Arsenal should have smelt blood.
Well, let me go on, Jim.
What I was going to say was that in these situations, Arsenal over here, I think... every cross they made in the first half, even from set pieces as well, every sort of crucial delivery was over hit. So they just blunted themselves in a situation where they did actually have opportunities to punish City for being a little bit sort of uncharacteristically sloppy. Yeah. And they didn't take it.
So you're right when you say that City were a little bit uncharacteristically sloppy. Company, obviously, you know, ended up a lovely old afternoon for him. Mm. But he started, he looked like he could be got at. Think about Spurs, Harry Kane and the rest of them. Think about Chelsea, Willian Hazard and so on. Liverpool, with their back lines, they'd have had them.
Yeah, 100%.
They would have gone, right, here we go. We've got our eye in already. And with Arsenal, it's the same.
Well this is
stuff.
The thing. As an Arsenal fan, we're all very jaded by this,
I'm
by
sure.
these types of performances.
But non-Arsenal fans are jaded
by
these
quite, yeah. It's the repetition of the same thing happening over and over and over again. It's just because, you know, you go into a game like this against opposition like City and you think, well, based on the way that the team play, probably going to be a stretch for Arsenal to win this. And you want to support your club. You want to tell yourself, no, back the team. Mm. You know, that you want the team to win. But you've seen the same thing happen over and over again.
But they have beaten Manchester City in a big game at Wembley.
That's what gives you that little bit of hope. But more often than not, you get the drab, disappointing performances. And you think, well, this could well be one of those again. And that's understandable as fans that have, you know, seen this happen time and time again to go into that with that worry. But the players seem to have that. And that's what was different at Wembley from the FA Cup finals. And obviously, you know, City are a big ask to beat in a cup final. Mm-hmm. But the players didn't seem to believe that they could actually turn that around. It looked like as soon as Arsenal conceded, same old, same old. But from the players rather than the fans.
Yeah, and the first goal, which you've mentioned, it almost beggars belief that we have to talk about a goal like that being conceded in a cup final on this show. Because if we've played football Sundays, Saturdays, whatever, if any of our colleagues were to defend in that way from a goal kick, and this is for maybe, I'm just putting this out there for people out there who maybe don't play football or whatever, or you know, whatever.
To put it in context.
Yeah, to contextualise it, absolutely. You can't be offside from a goal kick, right? So the first thing you've got to do is page one. It's the first paragraph. It's the first sentence on the first paragraph of page one when you're defending. Set yourself up properly. Get yourself goal side. Don't let him turn you. But before you even get to that stuff, get goal side on the guy. Mm. Don't get a nudge in the back from a 5'6" striker.
So soft,
when you were however big you are.
And he was complaining about it.
Remember, it's mad. Well, remember all of the goals that Ian Wright used to score in the 90s, where the defence was just absolute toilet.
Yeah.
And he used to like lob the ball over keepers all the time for fun. He was a good striker, but a lot of his goals were scored lobbing the goalkeeper.
How dare you?
It was like one of those, and it was an exciting goal to watch. He was like. Well, the keeper gave him no chance.
It was
at
a
all.
Lovely finish.
The really telling thing: how different would that goal be if Mustafi hadn't been there at all?
Yeah, it'd be exactly the same. Yeah.
And I thought Ospina is a goalkeeper with flaws and with his faults, and we all know that. But I thought he got a bit of a bad rap. Gary Neville said a lot of things I agree with, but he said that Ospina's made it easy for him. David Ospina's got absolutely no right to expect Mustafi to defend in that way.
Absolutely.
If you're stuck in that position, it's because you expect your £32 million defender, or however much he costs, to header an easy high ball. You should be eating those up all day.
Yeah.
I've played with players who would, if they were told they were playing at Wembley, they'd be shitting themselves. But if it was just a big high ball every 5 minutes for 90 minutes, they were great.
Yeah.
I'll be fucking man of the match because I'll do that all day every day.
Any Wigan defender's going to do that. Do you know what I mean? Any defender worth the salt in any league, professional or semi-pro.
And one thing that hasn't been picked up on, which I think should have been picked up on as well, is Gary Neville talked a bit about Xhaka and Ramsey in there. And I know Wilshere was in there as well, but he played a little bit further forward. Xhaka and Ramsey were sort of quite pedestrian in the way they were carrying themselves. They'd sort of, you know, walking around really and stuff. I know that Arsene Wenger's got a great style of management and it served him well over the years, but if I was the manager then, I'd be saying to Granit Xhaka, if you don't want to run, this is what you're going to do. You are going to follow David Silva wherever he goes on that pitch. You are going to Martin Keown David Silva, because if you haven't noticed, he's man of the match at the moment, and he will go on to be man of the match, and he's going to score a goal to put the cherry on the top. And if you're happy with that, you're not playing for me anymore.
Absolutely.
That's the minimum you can do. You can just follow him wherever he goes.
But you get the impression that when they got back into the dressing room, they all probably thought, oh, glad that's over. The bigger boys were beating us up there. And Wenger went, oh, well, not to worry. And then Wenger goes out and starts talking about the fourth official not giving them an extra minute.
I agree with what John said to us earlier. He said, oh, he lived it like an after dinner anecdote.
And I think we're surprised that nobody laughed. It's like laughing at like a story about him getting mugged off. It was just like such a weird. You would never admit that. Why would you admit that?
Wenger thinks he's on some sort of Frank Sinatra farewell tour. We're having a laugh.
Well, he is. Look at him.
The really interesting thing that got me thinking about this is when Arsene Wenger took over at Arsenal, they were seen as a club. You know, they were in a real crisis and in a bit of a mess, and that's because they were sixth.
It's come full circle.
Well, he might leave the club as he found them. Which is mad.
This is a new stadium.
Well, the aforementioned Ian Wright said that the way it's going, Wenger's decline at Arsenal, it's a bit like the way it ended in the ring for Muhammad Ali, or as he put, when Brazilian Ronaldo got fat, you know.
It's a portrait of decline, isn't it?
It's sad to see, actually. It really is.
Ronaldo never played badly when he was on the field, though, however size he was. You know what I mean? He just didn't play a lot.
Yeah,
Muhammad Ali was getting kicked in the leg by a Japanese MMA fighter for crying out loud.
Ronaldo's decline was very much he was on board with it and was very happy with it.
I agree with Wrighty's his point, but I think the analogy or the comparison I would have used would have perhaps been Brian Clough.
Who
clearly, maybe obviously for different reasons, wasn't clearly the manager he was, and ended in Forest relegation and all that, and we all remember the green jumper and all that kind of thing. But it's a similar thing.
But
you're too close to it. You can't. Yeah. You always. It's almost like that idea in these romantic stories of it. You always end up destroying the thing you love the most. That
sure,
type of thing.
But I would jump in actually. It seems a bit odd now.
Like Mustafi didn't.
Yeah. To try and sort of defend Wenger somewhat. The fact is, when you say about Brian Clough, his side got relegated, you know, and often when you talk about these great declines, they were disgraced and so on and so forth. Whereas actually Arsene Wenger, they are still, what were they, sixth? You know, they're still one of the top sides. So actually, you could say that he stayed far too long at the fair. But even so, Arsenal still are one of the top six in the country and got to a cup final. Obviously not good enough, and we've just talked about that. But it does show his quality, in a sense. It's just that his standards were sort of so high that he should have quit. But I think the problem for Wenger is he still probably thinks, you know what, next season we might win the league.
Well, this is it. I mean,
he's completely deluded.
I think that's the problem. If they finished 11th or something, he may
but
be
Brian
able
Clough's highs were higher, but his lows were also lower. Yeah, the comparison is the same.
That's true. I think the problem is that Arsenal fans are very impatient for the future now and want to see what comes next. But as we've said so many times, it's, you know, the board are still going to be a problem even when Wenger's gone.
Sack the board, Jim. Quite. Sack the board. We've got to talk about Manchester City a bit more, for crying out loud. Well, the first trophy they've won under old Pepster.
You could talk about them in context, and that it's really important they got a trophy and that Guardiola is now up and running, and maybe when... To me, it's funny because when you see them actually lift a trophy, you realise that some of the stuff that was being said around Christmas time was very, very premature. Like, oh, this is the greatest footballing Premier League side we've seen.
Yeah.
Well, now they've got a trophy on under their belt, mm-hmm. And that's important to mention. And I thought Guardiola carried himself with great dignity and pride, letting the players go up there and not getting involved and all the rest of it. But I'm sorry, in terms of the performance, weren't that good, didn't need to be that good.
1-3-0.
And I'm not going to say they were brilliant just because it was a cup final, because they weren't.
Yeah, true, but they ran out comfortable 3-0 winners.
They deserved to
and
win,
so you are
but they
right.
didn't need to be anywhere near their best.
Yeah, well, exactly, they didn't need to be.
Not unless... their fault, is it?
Well, no. It really isn't, but for Vincent Kompany, what a moment for him scoring that
goal. I was delighted for him.
And the celebration.
Also, for Aguero, Silva and Kompany, three living City legends.
Yeah, and the spine of that team, the sort of this modern era that have won trophies. And
that's important to say. I think Man City clearly are a historic, well-decorated club. They've had some fantastic players over the years, you know, and we all know that. But without question, some of their best players they've ever had are still playing for them now.
Yeah.
And for all three of them to score in a cup final is a fantastic achievement,
and
a fantastic testament to that. And given what Kompany's been through, I really liked his post-match interview where he was sort of almost realising the justification for working so hard to get himself back because the age he's at and the injuries he's had. It would have been an easier path for him to have not bothered.
I thought it was interesting that Guardiola put Claudio Bravo in goal, and I thought, why did he not play Willy Caballero? And someone said he might have gone to Chelsea. I thought, shut up.
We did check that, and everyone else is in fact wrong. It's not you.
You're fine, Marcus, you're fine.
Yeah.
Weird.
He never left, did he? So was there something about that? Anyway, but yes, good to see Benjamin Mendy leading the celebrations. He's never going to be fit, is he? He's quite happy with doing what he's doing.
No, he's a professional celebrator now. But like a hype man.
If it's funny, isn't it, the perception? Because if John Terry had been doing that, what would we be saying here?
Yeah. It's because John Terry's a horrible bellend.
Yeah,
Benjamin Mendy's really fun.
Yeah, there's
a lot of context.
Just to clarify.
Yeah. Context and history. You know, the previous histories of the men.
Mendy's never on the mend. That's what I quite like about it.
Yeah, it's poorly named Mendy.
Let's have a look of your knees, Mendy.
Yeah.
That's not.
Absolutely. Pep, he wore the yellow ribbon during the cup final.
He did.
He's been wearing it
which
for
is
like
an Arsenal
ages.
Song.
He wore a yellow ribbon, yeah.
Taking the mick.
He's been wearing it for months, and the FA suddenly go, "Oh, I think UEFA had a problem with it, so we better, you know, we better have a pop."
Yeah, but Pep has basically said, "I'm just going to keep wearing it."
Yeah, well, I'll pay all the fines.
His support for imprisoned Catalan politicians, charged by the FA, and they warned him not to wear it in the cup final. But he said, screw you, the man.
I mean,
there is a documentary he should not watch.
it's one of those situations where you sort of go, with everything being inherently political. What exactly is the difference between that and a poppy?
It's very hard to draw the line, isn't it?
Where do you draw the line?
Well,
exactly,
the poppy never used to be, and it still shouldn't be on paper, a political symbol. It's a symbol for remembrance, and that's how they justify it. But the problem is, everyone wants to make it political because everyone wants to make everything political these days.
Well, if you don't wear a poppy, you're a scumbag.
And well, quite. That's, yeah. And the idea of a poppy is that for this reason, you have the right to choose whether to wear one or not.
Exactly.
Not, it's not. It shouldn't be ramrodded through everyone. Uh-huh. But the yellow ribbon thing, I understand why the FIA are in the position they're in. It's almost, it feels a bit like a battle they can't win because they're not realistically going to ban him from the touchline for it.
Yeah.
They're just going to keep fining him and he's going to keep paying it.
Yeah.
And they're not going to...
Just as a Marie Curie one.
Yeah.
To Marie Curie, mate, what are you going to say?
Imagine if they went, all right, well, the fine is now £40 million.
Every time they fine him, he should add another one. Yeah. So by the end, he's just covered in them.
Double in
how many.
Yeah, but that's it, though. So if you're going to get fined for one, surely you get fined for... It doesn't matter how many you're wearing.
Well,
so
who knows?
He's covered. He should just come out in a big yellow ribbon suit.
Like a mascot.
Some of that, yeah.
Or just tied in one.
I found it interesting that his private jet was searched at Barcelona El Prat Airport.
Is this his private jet or a club private jet had the use of?
I suspect it's his. I think it's his.
I hope he's got a private jet.
Yeah, but you'd imagine Guardiola. I mean, isn't he not the king of Barcelona? Is that the problem?
A private jet.
You only have a lot of money.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
I think it'd be leased, as Pete said, which isn't actually as expensive as you might think. I've never done it, though.
All right, spell it.
But yeah, the police were checking to see if he was smuggling the Catalan politician who's currently in Belgium or something. I don't know where. I don't know where he is. Okay,
they did
don't
find Julian Assange. They did find Julian Assange. He was in there.
I love the thought of Pep. You know, for someone accusing Pep of smuggling people, you know,
imagine
into
it.
The country. Nice idea.
Didn't the footballer do that once? Didn't he get? Didn't he get a Mourinho, girl? Didn't he get a girl on it?
Don't name him. Don't name him.
But like, she didn't have a passport or anything. She went, "Oh yeah, just come back." So I go, "You're going to another country, mate." I can't remember which footballer it was.
Do it.
It's
do
probably
it.
Just as well.
For safety, I'll say Ronaldinho.
That's the only footballer you can name. That's fine.
Yeah. That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
He just won't want to bring attention to himself, so he won't. He won't see us.
But there we are. The first trophy has been dished out.
They're going to have at least two this season.
At least two.
It gave the OCD part of my brain a little bit of annoyance thinking that if they win the league and the Champions League and the League Cup, can I call that a treble in my own mind? And I haven't decided yet, so I hope I don't bloody do it.
Right. Well, if they've won three trophies, that's a treble of trophies.
But it's not a traditional treble, though, is it?
No, it's not, but it's a treble. Is the idea of a traditional treble redundant?
No, but Jim, if you start going down that road, with the greatest respect, you're on the path where you start calling things a treble with the Community Shield like Mourinho, and we don't want to be there.
Let's move on to a side who have won a treble, Manchester United.
They did.
I know they did, yeah.
Last season. I will not let it go. Yeah. Yes, Mourinho was the winner. Conte was the loser.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to pan out like that watching the first half. Chelsea flew out the traps and looked a lot better. Nice to see Kante and Drinkwater in the middle. I still find that lovely, even though obviously it's
bit
happened.
Of weird romance.
A number of times before.
I thought Drinkwater did okay, by the way.
I thought he did as well. Murata should have scored early on when he hit the bar from close range with a super cross.
He's not in great form, is he?
Marcos Alonso, no. And then I know Alexis Sanchez had a good chance as well, but the way Willian and Hazard were running them ragged, you thought to yourself, you know, and then Willian scored, of course, and combined well those two.
Willian's in tremendous nick.
Oh,
he's
one of my favourite players at the moment. Yeah. He's got such great pace and style and plays with a smile on his face as well, which is always pleasing to see. But they looked really good in the first half to Chelsea, and it was only Lukaku actually coming into the game and doing what we've all hoped he would do against one of the bigger sides.
Were you pleased for him?
I genuinely was.
Yeah,
Did it touch you? I was too.
Because Lukaku, that's his first goal against any of the so-called Big Six teams this season. And he'd only managed four shots on target in six such games before that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the stats bear out the whole, you know, the idea that he wasn't doing it against them. So I think it's really good for him to do that. Because he's still young. It's mad to
It has to be viewed in the context of the team he's playing for and the way they set up. I talked about this earlier in the season. I was delighted for him because he put another goal on as well. He looked
so much better. He looked so different.
He was arguably United's most important player on the day.
Well, clearly.
But I feel that the way that... I mean, you've put in the run on here again, Marcus. Man United weren't brilliant, but they got the win. I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of times we talk about Man United being like that, and I went to town a bit on them last week, talking about Lukaku not scoring against the big teams. I mean, he's playing at a team that despite their history and despite their legend, don't really give a striker as much chance as they should to actually get a goal against a big team because they just don't want to lose all the time.
I agree with that point because when, in the 90s, when the likes of Andy Cole used to score a lot of goals for Manchester United. People say, oh, well, if you played for other sides, you wouldn't get as many chances and blah, 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 blah.
It works both ways.
It does, but, I mean, you know, he scored a lot of goals, so fair enough. But with Lukaku, now at Manchester United, it is a fair point what you've said there, Luke. Actually, don't get an awful lot of chances. It gets more than, say, what he might do at Everton when he was there. But
against the smaller teams, though.
Of course. But that performance he put in against Huddersfield, when we talked about, was it in the Cup when they won 2-0? Recently they went there. He looked more like the Lukaku that we all know and love. And I remember thinking, right, I think we even mentioned it. Hopefully he can build on that and do it. And that was the player we saw against Chelsea. Yeah. The bursting run at the end, the acrobatic shot that just went over the bar, that kind of thing. Yeah. He thought, ah, now we're talking here.
I don't want to make it sound like I don't think Lukaku's not got. I don't think Lukaku's not got flaws in his game. I think he has. I think he's an improving player still. And Jim makes a good
point
about it.
Every striker does, though. You know, yeah, everyone's got.
But he's not being helped. If he was playing, it's difficult to make a comparison because Liverpool don't really play in this way. But if he was playing for, I don't know, like a team who focus on attacking as much as Liverpool, but can accommodate a big forward, I think he'd be doing a lot better.
But you could also argue that some of the players that he's playing with, not all, of course, but the likes of Alexis Sanchez or even Martial, Rashford's perhaps to a lesser extent, they're very forward players themselves. You know, it's not even right to call them wingers. It's a sort of forward now, as we say. Yeah.
They've got
era.
So many attacking players. They just don't use them.
But they're going for goal themselves. You know, if he played with, say, traditional wingers or people who are all about assists before goals, then maybe he might get a few more.
I read in an Irish newspaper yesterday that it was all because you won a Brit Award midweek. So.
Very good.
Jesse Lingard.
Messi Lingard.
With another vital goal.
With a Black Panther celebration as well.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, did he?
A film I bloody enjoyed.
Nice. That's very good. He's quite the impact sub, isn't he?
He is. And I like that he's turning into a sort of big game player, isn't he? Which is excellent.
Bodes well.
He can overshadow Lukaku when the two teams meet in the World Cup.
I'll get to the point now where I'll be happy to see him introduced for England in the 15, 20 minutes to go.
Now you're talking.
I'm actually quite interested in the idea of him playing centre-half.
Yeah, well, if he can attack the football like he did, you know, with that header, then fine, get him in there. Get him in there. But, yeah, but you know, United, as we say, weren't brilliant, but they did get the win. But it's still, it's not the most satisfying of performances. And will this sort of result, despite the performance, be enough to keep Mourinho at Old Trafford for a number of years to come?
What, like it hasn't at every job he's ever had?
But this is a club where he wants to put down roots. He wants to be there for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've heard that, but his behaviour is consistent with how it's been at the other clubs he's been at. And you wonder, like, if that situation will become untenable in future. I mean, I think we'd all kind of like to see Mourinho maybe chill out a bit, put some roots down, and you know, have a legacy. But I just, this doesn't look different, does it? I mean, I know he signed a new contract, and I actually, you know, I would like to see Mourinho sort of do what he's kind of hinted he would do, and kind of perhaps, you know, play a bit more of an attacking style and play in the way that the fans at Man United expect. But I just don't know if he's going to do that.
It's actions and words, isn't it? It's actually, the words are the words, and he's signed a new contract, and he's saying what he's saying off the pitch and on the pitch. He's not delivering that, anything that would suggest that. Mm. Man United fans, he is Jose Mourinho, and his name comes with a lot of cachet, and he's won a lot of things. If they're still playing football like this in a year's time, it won't be up to him. It won't be up to him every step.
Do you think that he thinks that as long as he's winning stuff, people won't care, which has always been the case.
It's not even winning stuff, it's just about headlines, isn't it?
Well, treble last season, mate.
Exactly.
If his face is on the back of a newspaper, I think he thinks he's doing the right job, because it always historically has worked for him.
All this conversation revolves around the idea that it'll be Mourinho's decision. And I'm telling you now, if they finish third next, I think they might finish third this season. If they finish third next season, they play the football they're playing with the money they've spent, it won't be up to him.
Well, and I think what Pete's saying there about, you know, Mourinho, the problem is Mourinho, as I think Jonathan Wilson's written quite eloquently about him, he was never a player back in the day. He wants to be the main man.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Just before we go to a break, one national newspaper in England believes that if Antonio Conte can't resolve his differences with the board and leaves before the end of the season, then Louis van Gaal will step in. And I'd like to say, you may or may not be the praying types, but if you are, put your hands together for that.
I'm not the praying type, but I am.
That'd be incredible. Yeah. Conte's reaction to all of this stuff has been brilliant. A couple of weeks ago, he was really talking up Luis Enrique's qualities. Like, you're trying to scout your own replacement.
Don't it probably is, because if he gets fired, he'll probably get a payoff. That's yeah,
exactly,
why.
Exactly.
Is there a room in church for me Sunday?
There's room for
hey, God, it's been a while, mate. Last time it was like me asking you for a girlfriend at 13, so... Yeah.
Now I'm asking for Louis Van Gaal. How the times have changed. Right, we are going to talk about Alan Pardew after this.
Ugh.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
It was like the parts in the Red Sea. People just went, whoop.
They certainly did. Right, before we talk about old Pardsy, it's time for correspondence with Peteman.
It is, mate. Let me just write down something.
The Alan Pardew of the Football Ramble, Pete Donaldson.
Not having that. That's not nice, is it?
You've stolen a taxi. You are a terrible boozer.
Terrible bloke.
That's not Alan Pardew, though. That was his players. Hmm. Stop trying to bring him in.
I'm talking about
his own faults.
I'm talking about you.
So now that you are him, you're defending him.
I know. I've become everything I hate. Hello to Callum. Hello, Callum.
All right, Callum.
Hello, lads. On the latest show, I was delighted to hear a mention of Kevin King's Soccer Circus. Mm. That oft-forgotten relic of mid-noughties football patter.
I love it how everyone calls it a soccer school, but with Keegan it's a soccer circus.
I know, yeah.
What I like, no, I think it wasn't it called a soccer circus or something.
It was the name of it.
Yeah. That genuinely was, that's what I mean. Like everyone else, it would be a soccer school. Keegan calls it.
Growing up in Glasgow, I was about 14 when a school friend invited me along to the soccer circus for a day out. It was fucking shit. We were the only people there, and the board staff let us go round twice extra for free. It makes it sound like it was an amusement.
No, I think it was like an experience type thing. It wasn't like a Bobby Charlton type thing.
I think it was
a travelling like mini soccer theme park.
Why is Keegan involved?
We talked about this years ago. Figurehead,
mate.
Kevin Keegan's football clusterfuck.
Yeah. Give it a Google.
It's fucking shit.
Yeah.
Give it a Google.
Why are you firing me out of a cannon?
As we were leaving, though, we noticed the great man himself exiting the office. Ah. So he didn't have to stick around. He was clearly just a figurehead, promotional figurehead. But no, he puts the hours in. Keggy is brilliant. Yeah.
Two people in that day.
Yeah. if my name's on the door, I really should be there every day.
I should be checking fire exits.
I'm not a lion tamer. Don't put me in the cage with him.
We were the only people there, as I said, and boss staff let us go around twice extra for free. We approached Keggy tentatively. I, a lifelong Man City fan, like my dad, was wearing an 05-06 home shirt. Oh. We're talking Barton, we're talking Vassell, we're talking Fowler. My friend was wearing a bright orange Valencia away shirt he'd gotten on holiday. Keegan was initially very friendly, but when I asked him to sign my City shirt, he said, "I'm not fucking signing that. It was the season after I left."
Fair enough, to be fair to Keegan.
Turning his attention briefly to my friend, he pointed at the Valencia shirt and said, "What the fucking hell is that? We were 14. He's gone off on one, hasn't he? He returned to my shirt, signing it reluctantly and commenting on how filthy it was.
Filthy.
You want to give that a wash, kid.
Maybe he was in a bad mood after a recent pratfall.
Maybe. Yeah. I took my signed shirt home and immediately put it in a frame, which would fall off the wall and smash it a few days later, because of course it did.
Apparently, you also took the Valencia shirt off the kid, washed it in this wash machine, and it shrunk it.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I lost touch with this girlfriend, but I hope somewhere there's still an orange Valencia away shirt with a massive Kevin Keegan signature.
Maybe he's listening to the show.
Inexplicably sharpied on it.
Pete, maybe we can what's the word? Reunion.
Get them back together. The reunion islands.
I mean, we must, generation-wise, we must have a lot of listeners who went to that soccer circus. So do get in touch.
Yeah. Did anyone end up being a professional footballer? That's what I want to know. So thank you.
From going to a Kevin Keegan soccer-themed theme park.
It's like Mr. Blobby World, isn't it?
Yeah.
The soccer circus closed for
a bit. So did anyone ever become a TV presenter by meeting Noel Edmonds?
The soccer circus closed for a good 8 months later. So there we go. Get Callum. Hello to Rob Gowling in County Durham. Long time listener, first time emailer. After listening to your debate on the normality of Saul Campbell, I felt it best to share a story that involves a peculiar encounter with none other than the big man himself. Ooh. He was a bigger man at the time because he'd not long finished playing for Newcastle. I was a student in Newcastle and worked security part-time. I got a shift working at a celebrity fashion show at Gosforth Park. In attendance and participating were Tim Krul, Shawla, Sammy, recent retiree Saul, and John Carver. There you go.
What a lineup.
I know. Yeah. What a coup for the fashion show. I think I remember the photographs in this shoot, actually. Towards the end of the night, the beers had been flowing, but Saul seemed as sober as a judge. As he left, he made sure to say thank you and goodbye to every single member of staff that was working, which I thought was a strange yet nice touch. Being one of the doormen on the front, I was one of the last he passed, thanked, and he said his goodbyes too. This is where it became less than normal. As Sol and his partner passed me at the door, he shook my hand and thanked me with the words, "Cheers, big fella, it's been wonderful." I realised immediately after the handshake that something had been left in my hand, looking down to find half a toffee crisp still in its wrapper.
Wow, that is very strange.
I looked back up at Sol, and he winked as if to say, "That one is on me." Basically, right. half my toffee.
It's not even what I would describe as a top 10 chocolate bar.
No, it's half eaten.
Yeah,
that's the bit that's annoying for me.
It's not even half a top 10 chocolate bar.
So he just got into his taxi, which he paid for because Pardew wasn't in attendance. So there we go.
Pardew was driving it.
Very strange. Thank you for that, Rob. Carver was in attendance, not in the fashion show. That would have been a treat to see. I know, right? Wouldn't that be incredible?
Yeah.
This one is from Woody. Hello, Woody.
Go on, Woody.
First, I would like to express my public thanks to my friend Raj, currently in Madrid and formerly of Plymouth, for recommending your podcast to me. Secondly, while we mentioned Plymouth, seamless link there, can I please flag the disservice done to the lower leagues done by the Ramble? Mr. Moore mentioning Pompey's monotonous march to mid-table mediocrity doesn't really count as coverage of League 1 and 2. When, I ask, will you give due credit and a deserved spotlight to the miracles being performed at the other end of the South Coast by Mr. Derek Adams of Plymouth Argyle? In a comeback worthy of Rocky Balboa himself, the mighty Argyle have gone from the bottom of League One in December into the playoff positions before March. No team in the country has won more league games than us since Derek was appointed. Regardless of where we finish, the season has been phenomenal. Another step back up from the near oblivion we faced during administration not very long ago. Why did the Ramble ignore us, basically, is the tenet of his argument. On a side note, in my capacity as the drummer for occasional radio-bothering band Bastille...
Ooh,
we've got the drummer from Bastille, Emil and Giles.
And he's angry.
He's angry. Last summer, I crossed paths with Pete in his guise as an aspiring Radio 1 DJ. When I excitedly told him how much I enjoyed the Ramble, he grunted and was not arsed, really. Clearly not arsed. Can't win them all.
Peter!
Jim made the point when we read this email off air... That Woody clearly mistook humility for arrogance.
Yeah, you are very you are full of humility, aren't you? And you like
full
to
of
sort
it.
Of you are, and you like to play
I'm
down your
full
own.
Full of humility. Let's drink.
He's a modest man with plenty to be modest about.
Hey. What I would say is that I remember that interview, and he did stop the interview mid interview and asked why I wasn't wearing shoes.
Yeah.
Well, that's, so
he's not the weird one there.
This is turning into Pete's Wicked Whispers.
Indeed. Yeah.
What I would say to Woody, based around League One, from one League One fan. To League One club fan to another, is that, you know, I'm not going to watch other League One teams.
No.
it's bad enough to watch Portsmouth in League One. I do understand Plymouth are on an amazing run. They've leapfrogged Pompey, Kel Surprise. It's not exactly fucking surprising.
Yeah, but they're only 4 points above them.
I know, but they've been on an amazing run. They started off
completely
shit.
They have been on a great run, yeah.
But I'm not. I mean, unless Pompey are playing Plymouth in that really annoyingly called Dockyard Derby, even though we're about 300 miles away from each other, I'm not keeping up with Plymouth. I know Derek Adams, of course. He's done a good job there. Was he Hibs manager? Or was he a Hibs assistant manager for a while? Something like that. He definitely came from up in Scotland. All I've got.
Look, we're not keeping up with Plymouth. I have, as my job as Absolute Radio DJ, I've got to keep up with Bastille. So I think that should be enough, Woody, to be honest. And later in that show that I interviewed him on, I actually said Woody was my favourite member. Probably because he said he listened to the Ramble, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad scene to mind, though. If band members are bold enough to stick their heads above the parapet, are you in a band and you listen to the Ramble who have been in the top 100? We've got confirmed members from Editors.
Yeah.
New album, Mount 9th of March.
Heads.
Yeah. Churches. Fugeheads. Yeah.
Fugeheads did the theme.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Ross did.
Ross did from the Fugeheads.
The Beatles.
Churches.
There was talk of Johnny Marr. There was talk of Johnny Marr.
Yeah. We sent him a book. He sent one of his books. So I think Johnny Marr is a confirmed member.
The rhythm guitarist of One-Eyed Willie.
Yeah. My favourite ever. So for those who are listening who don't know this, One-Eyed Willie was Pete's ska punk sort of pop punk band when he was a kid. The best,
and I was good to the drummer.
Yeah, the best.
I was nice to the drummer in the band.
The best ever.
I was the only one following the rhythm.
Oh, wait, Marcus, you know this. Best ever One-Eyed Willie moment is they made a video, like a music video, and there's a guy filming, and Pete, as we all know what Pete's like, he wanted to be involved in the creative
All that humility that Jim talked about.
There's a great scene in the video where they're filming Pete who's playing guitar, and Pete is motioning with his head to try and get the cameraman to film something else over and over again by nodding his head.
That didn't look well.
That was the creative high point of One-Eyed Willie.
Yeah, stop pointing the camera at me.
Is it on YouTube?
Probably somewhere.
Can we talk about
show at thefootballramble.com if you want to send us an email, or if you're in a member of a band,
and
a hit parade bothering band.
And I've just remembered why we normally keep the email section really brief.
Yeah.
Me settling scores with drummers from bands.
Yeah, right, who I've never heard.
Look, I've got a question for you all. How is Pard still in a job?
Yeah, I can't answer it.
Shot the footballramble.com.
I mean, he might not be by
next. I mean, what I love about this is that they've sacked the board.
Yeah,
as
the chairman
well.
And the chairman. CEO have both been sacked. Pardew's still there.
They're going to start banning season ticket holders next.
Well, Pardew, you can tell by his body language and his words. He's almost looking around going, yeah, I'm still here. It is a bit weird, I grant you. I might not be next week. But Pardew said after the match that it'll be very tough to save their season. But he seemed resigned to it. Unlike Allardyce, when Allardyce took over at Crystal Palace, Allardyce was saying, this is going to be tough. This might go all the way down to May. But when Allardyce was saying that, you felt that Allardyce was thinking, this is going to take me longer to save them, but I will save them. Mm. Or at least I'm going to have a bloody good go at it. With Pardew, it's almost like he's shrugging his shoulders going, yeah. And then he goes, well, 3 wins in 37 says it all, really. And I'm thinking, if you're a West Brom fan, you'd be looking at that man and saying, come on. If you're not doing this in the media, what are you saying to the players? Now, I know managers can say one thing or another, but it's strange.
They also, in this situation now, the team, where they've got 6 games which are winnable in a row, and the first one was Huddersfield, which they lost at home at the weekend.
Well, they've only got 10 games to go now in the league.
But Marcus, those 6 games, Huddersfield at home, Watford away, Leicester at home, Bournemouth away, Burnley at home, Swansea at home.
You've got to pick up points. And Pardew, they haven't had a new manager bounce. If that was me, I'd have probably, I know the board, you know, we can say that, the board have gone, but people can say, oh, well, football clubs are a little bit too trigger happy and so on. It's clearly not working under Pardew. Now, we've seen some great escapes before in the league. And if they go on to do this, then I'll eat my words. But at the moment, you look at Pardew and you look at that side and all the nonsense off the field and so on and so forth, and you think, flipping it, you'd be better off getting someone else in there. Paolo Di Canio, somebody who's just going to stick a rocket up every orifice.
Well, he took over in November, and it took him till about 2 weeks ago. No, it was January, wasn't it? It took him to the middle of January to win a Premier League game.
It's been so uninspiring.
Yeah.
I just don't see how it's going to ignite anytime soon.
But as you say, like looking at that interview, you feel like Pardew doesn't know either.
Exactly.
And again, like managers and footballers are human beings, so you know we see their emotional sides lead them and come out sometimes, and that's what that interview looked like to me. But he looks like he hasn't got a clue, which I mean, you're screwed, aren't you, in that situation?
But if you're a West Brom fan, you must be thinking, well, who's doing something?
Yeah.
You've checked the chairman and the CEO, okay, fine. There's probably reasons for that. I don't know the ins and outs. But you've got to mix it up somehow. They've got some all right players in that side. Yeah. Mm. They're only 7 points. Now, if you think about how badly they've performed, actually 7 points isn't that bad. You know, it's still very tight down there. And teams are taking points off each other. 10 games to go, there's still a chance.
Yeah.
But my goodness, it's got to change.
Seven points is a piss take, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's like, what I mean. Just, so think about like, how bad they've been, and they're only 7 points. Yeah. So normally they'd be about 12 or something. Yeah. Right now, that kind
but
of
there's talk that the Watford game is the chance for Pardew to save his job, isn't it? But does that ever work, apart from that famous example of Alex Ferguson and Mark Robinson?
Yeah,
which has later been said to sure. not be true.
Yeah,
anyway.
You never know, because there might be managers who do win a game and then
he needs to headbutt someone.
I think that's it.
Well, the other thing is there's no one to replace him, because we've run out of managers.
Yeah. Well, Louis van Gaal.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. He's got one lined up.
Again, I'll see you in church on Sunday. Yeah. The church that Pardew's actually been to before, funnily enough. But anyway, it's still very close down the bottom of the table. But Brighton got themselves a big win against Swansea. And when you're looking at that bottom 10 or whatever it is in the Premier League, and you think that it's all very tight, when Brighton put in a performance like that and a statement like that, and they go, what are they, 4 points, I think, above the kind of the chasing pack, if you like. You think to yourself, that is a statement, you know. And now there's such a good feel around Brighton. You're beating one of your relegation rivals, if you like.
Handily as well.
Yeah, exactly, by 4 goals. Your front line, they're all scoring. I mean, Glenn Murray, they were making the point in the Match of the Day, 34 years old. There's some off-the-field stuff going on, but he's had so many injuries, concentrating on the field, so many injuries and some real long-term injuries. But 34, relatively speaking, banging in the Premier League goals. Absolutely fantastic.
I think with Brighton as well, they've got, if you look at their team, look at the team you played at the weekend, against the resurgent Swansea side, there's lots to be positive about. We've got Gross, who's, as I said at the start of the season,
a fantastic
player.
Him,
He's under the radar. For the money they paid for him, he's been one of the signings of the season. Knockout is a really talented player.
What a goal, though, the way he shifted the ball.
He was the best player in the championship last season. Ben Murray can still do what he can do, but even if you look at the back, I mean, I know he scored an own goal, but Lewis Duncan, Shane Duffy, I think they're almost ever present as centre-halves. They've got a good understanding. They've got a good relationship with the goalkeeper. And you've got Chris Hughton, who is... He's clearly not going to manage at the very, very top level, but he's got a lot of experience. He knows what it takes, and he seems like he's a very personable guy.
And fosters a good spirit around the club.
And I think with that in their locker, they're always going to have been okay. I don't even think we've talked too much about them being relegated, have we, this season? I mean, it's not really something that's come up over and over again.
It's always been in this context, isn't it? And they look like they're going to be okay. And also getting Ojoa back was a canny signing. And Jurgen Lacadia looks a very good player as well. Scored in the FA Cup on his debut, didn't he? And scored in his Premier League debut as well.
We've also got to talk about the context of the Premier League this season, because, fine, they're only on paper 4 points off relegation, okay? But they're 11th. Yeah, they're 12th. Mm-hmm. There's like eight teams below them, whatever it is. Every single one of those teams has got to improve for them to drop down to the point where they're going to be in that relegation zone. And it's very unlikely to happen, because the reason those teams are in there in the first place is because they're shit. So it's hard to see them going on a run where they're going to be in danger of relegation.
Yeah, I did enjoy the Chris Hughton after the game, 4-1 winners, and he just said it was a worthy scoreline.
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
enjoy it.
Get up there, son.
What's going to happen with Swansea now, though? That's what the interesting thing, because they've done enough to pull themselves out of it.
Well, they're on 27 points.
But they're back in the relegation zone now.
Yeah, same points as Palace, 2 behind Newcastle United.
Not a great draw after being 2-0 up, and John's missed a bit of a sitter.
That's a nightmare for those away fans as well. That is a hell of a
I feel a bit sorry for Shelby, as far as that people have mentioned that more than once. Oh, yeah, we had a chance to make it 3. I mean, they were still 2-0 up.
And also the defender got... Yeah, they shouldn't need that kind of...
It was more... Shelby switching off, but I think Frank Lampard highlighted.
Yeah, but my point is, Marcus, that if you need to score 3 to be sure of a win 10 minutes from the end, you've got bigger problems.
Sure.
And Shelby has never been the sort of player. He looks like the sort of player who's a bit of rough and tumble, who can, you know, but he does that because he's really clumsy and he kind of hurts people more often than not. He's not a great closer downer of player, and he's not. No. He shouldn't have to be, really.
But what Newcastle need is someone on their books who can score goals. Who can put games to bed.
Marcus.
But unfortunately, he's currently plying his trade in West London at the moment. Let's go to the Championship. Fulham, eh? Thrashing Wolves. Top of the table, Wolves. 2-0. Mitro, what a goal! Chuck the defender off his turn.
Pete
walks
up the group in capital saying, give him back, your thief.
I think there might have been a word in between what you just said.
I've already done my swear of the show, so I can't do another one.
Yeah. Oh, Mitrovic, man of the match performance.
It was a great shit. I mean, the three defenders just did just let him get on with it, but it was a great strike. Oh, and muscling and
love that.
Fantastic.
Better
than his one he did last week.
On fire.
Yeah, great game at the Stadium of Light, wasn't there?
Oh, my goodness, what about that one, eh? Action-packed derby, yeah. Middlesbrough pushing for a playoff spot, but Callum McManaman equalised at the end. Now,
I didn't realise he hates Pulis. I didn't know
the
that.
Brass balls on the guy. The last man I would want to goad is Tony Pulis.
I know, right?
Because he will take retribution.
Does he hate him because of the West Brom connection?
Must be.
Yeah, that's passed me by that.
Brass monkey balls.
Well, he ran over and gave it some to Tony Pulis. Yeah. I think...
He was last seen getting sent off for like a handball when he scored a goal with his hand and he got sent off.
Oh, did he?
I remember that back here.
Chris Coleman said, because obviously it was the last minute, it was to make it 3-3 in an action-packed game. Two sendings off. I mean, my goodness, the game had everything.
The biggest North-East derby you can get, really.
Probably at the moment, yeah. And Chris Coleman said, I thought he was going to run over and celebrate with me, but he just wanted a few words with Tony, you know.
Patrick Bamford's got a goal of real quality as well. He's a conundrum of a player, isn't he?
He is, yeah. The feet on Bamford's first one was absolutely delightful.
Your feet are that quick and you've got that sort of composure in the box. You should still be able to score in the Premier League.
True.
Yeah, but for some reason he can't.
My favourite thing from the match report was that apparently there was a flock of seagulls persistently swooping low across the pitch.
They were not seagulls. They were crows, and they smelt carrion. That is the rotting flesh that is Northeast football.
Dark wings, dark words.
Indeed, yeah. But Sunderland's still in trouble. But at the other end of the table, Fulham, they're on the march, ladies and gentlemen, on the march. Right, we are going to talk about Grimsby Town after this.
Ooh.
That was loud, wasn't it, from Drogba?
Indeed, yeah.
That's his swear of the show.
The Football Ramble preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Thursday, of course. How did our better get on, Luke?
Pete, you want to put some violin music under this or something? Because Tom Rodden, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah.
You're out of here.
No.
You went for Watford did beat Everton.
They did.
It's a shocking game. But Watford did win it. Allardyce has done an awful job at Everton, but we probably haven't got time to talk about that now. But Tom thought Watford would win, but both teams would score. That, alas, did not happen. So Tom is way out of the hot seat before it's even warmed up. Mm. So we need a new Bet365 Best Bet Better show at thefootballramble.com, and I will pick one out for Thursday's show.
There we are. Now, Grimsby Town, quite clearly a club who know what's good for them. they've heard that Sol Campbell is one of the greatest minds in football, and they're willing to talk with him to potentially become their manager. They are 20th at the moment, 6 points above the relegation zone. But that doesn't matter to Big Sol, because when he was asked about their league position and whether it could deter him from taking over, he said, definitely not. I come from a hard background. Now, despite Sol Campbell commenting in the media about the Grimsby Town job, I did find that the Grimsby Town chairman, John Fenty, speaking on local radio's comments quite funny. He said, I'm surprised we haven't heard from Sol. He said that clubs aren't taking a punt on young managers. We'd have a chat with him.
Oh, called his bluff.
Yeah, well, I mean, what it is.
Speaking of, as much,
it sounds like it, doesn't
the
it?
The thing about John Fenty is he's never on the fent.
No. Fentanyl.
But you're sometimes chasing deer across Richmond Park.
In my capacity as the only man to have watched Grimsby Town in the flesh this season, Mansfield Town 4, Grimsby 1.
Yeah,
they were terrible. Uh-huh. And could it get worse with Big Sol as the manager? Yes, actually. Yeah. I think it probably could.
Would he not normalise the club, though?
Yeah. I mean, he's got the sort of down-to-earth, you know, man of the people touch, hasn't he?
He does, so he does.
He'd unite that squad.
Sort of thing, a man of the people touch you'd expect from a potential Tory mayoral candidate of London.
Exactly, yeah.
Talking about today, we'll be hunting foxes instead of training.
Yeah. Talking about man of the people, just very quickly before we go to Going for Gold, this one in Argentina made me laugh. Independiente, who are one of the big five teams in Argentina, I think that's what they're called. You know, a huge side in Buenos Aires. Obviously not as big as Boca or River, but still a big side. Their coach, Ariel Holan, came under fire recently as he hired celebrity warlock El Brujo Manuel to join his backroom staff ahead of a cup match.
Brujo means witch in Spanish, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah, but obviously male.
Well, Brujo would mean warlock because witch is for the female.
Yeah, bruja would be witch. Although Veron's nickname was
witch. The witch, yeah.
He took David May's shirt.
as well he should have done.
El Brujo Manuel. Can this be true?
Well, he's a celebrity warlock now in Argentina.
Celebrity warlock?
With Paddy McGuinness.
Sorry, I think I've announced that.
He claims to be a celebrity warlock.
Yeah. That's Luke's tribute band, Celebrity Warlock.
Yeah. But a good band, the Warlock.
Very good. Well, they lost the game.
Mm.
And old Manuel was meant to provide some luck or something like that. And it caused one Argentinian media outlet to ask the question of El Brujo Manuel, is the magic over? Now, I thought to myself, again, I can't stress, this is not some league third division amateur side. This is Independiente.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine Sam Allardyce, Everton? Well, we're going to get Derek Acor on the bench.
I feel like I should.
Peter Reid is working for Wigan.
Derek McCaughey used to be a footballer. I should say and apologise to everyone listening at home because I may have been caught uttering the word slightly earlier in the show. We don't have time to talk about Everton v Watford. Yeah, apparently we have got time for this.
Well, I mentioned Everton.
And we should always have time for this.
All right. We don't have time for that because Pete is ready to do Going for Glold.
All right, then. When they're going for Glold. Right, so let's get into it nice and quick. Thank you to Chris Morris for this particular
nomination. Who won last week? Marcus?
Nomination.
Oh, it might have been Jim, actually.
No, it was Marcus, wasn't it?
I'm on a hat-trick.
It was the Dutch player. It was Hasselbank, wasn't it?
I'm on a hat-trick, boy.
Are you really? Yeah. Nah.
Okay.
Because
this.
The previous week, people said, oh, you shouldn't have had two guesses, and we said, well...
You can have it.
It's referee's decision. Well, you know, play to the whistle.
I might revisit that decision if you win this week.
Right, here's a Going for Glold for you, Glold. trademark pending. I was born on the 17th of July, 1976.
Okay.
I only played for two clubs in my 21-year senior career, racking up a total of 561 appearances and 82 goals.
Stop. Nicky Butt.
Nice.
Incorrect. I moved to England in June 2001 for a £750,000 fee.
Stop. Eric Backer.
Incorrect.
Where's that come from? Oh, because we did the lease again.
Where's that come from? Having played under Harry Redknapp, I concluded that Harry is a really nice guy, but football skills, I did not see any tactical skills. Tactically, there's not much there.
Could be anyone.
Could be anyone, really, yeah.
Even though this guy only played for two clubs.
Yeah.
I am the sixth most capped European player of all time. 148 caps. I represented my nation in the 2004, 2008 and 2012 European Championships, as well as the 2002 and 2006 World Cups.
Wow, that's a very good
record. Huge, isn't it?
I know where he's from.
Where's he from, Marcus?
Well, say then. Think of the listeners.
Keep that one under the hat for now.
In the 2002 World Cup, I scored a free kick against Argentina and was denied a golden goal against Senegal by the post, Marcus Speller.
Seb Larsson.
Incorrect.
No, that's rubbish. He's not as old as he is.
Oh, not so old.
All right, he's Swedish.
Thank you for that, Marcus.
There you go.
In 2013, I was the unfortunate centre of a... I found myself at the unfortunate centre of a sexism scandal when I was gifted a Volvo car for becoming the most capped male player in Sweden's history, while the most capped female player for Sweden, Teresa Sjögren, who has 187 caps, received absolutely bot-all.
Olof Melberg?
Incorrect.
It's the most capped Swedish player and we don't know it.
That's poor, isn't it?
Well, you were piping up earlier saying you knew it.
No, I knew which country.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, and now you do as well.
Yeah.
Who was the most capped female player than Marcus? Yeah, who was it then?
What you said.
Don't need to, mate.
Yeah. They
just rewind
it.
click the minus 15 seconds twice. I played for Southampton on the losing side of the 2003 FA Cup final against Arsenal.
Anders Svensson?
It's got to be.
Anders Svensson!
Yeah. Well done, Jimmy.
Correct. Well done, Chris Morris, for that one.
It's one of those things where now I know it's Anders Svensson. I'm not annoyed at myself for not knowing who the most capped Swedish player is.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's mad.
Instantly forgettable player.
Agreed. Absolutely. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble. It's been a pleasure talking to you or with you, depending on how you listen to the podcast, of course. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Petey.
See you later.
See you on Thursday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer.
It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.